We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2 online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. When it comes to health care, what can the U.S. learn from other nations? That is the question journalist T.R. Reid set out with when he began the legwork for his latest book, The Healing of America, A Global Quest for Better, Cheaper, and Fairer Health Care. This afternoon, we'll talk with Reid about what he learned. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments for our guest, T.R. Reid. You may join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Our toll-free number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. You may also send questions and comments by email. The address, will-talk@illinois.edu. T.R. Reid is a longtime correspondent for The Washington Post and former chief of its Tokyo and London bureaus, as well as a commentator for NPR. His new book, The Healing of America, is published by the Penguin Press. Again, the phone numbers 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and our email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. T.R. Reid, how are you? Good to talk with you again.
Hey, Celeste. Great to be back on Will. Thanks for asking me.
Sure. Well, what do you think is going to happen now with health care reform as a result of the voters of Massachusetts sending Republican Scott Brown to the U.S. Senate?
What's the latest? I think the latest I saw was the Democrats are now kind of talking about sitting back and thinking for a while and putting it on hold, but I think they're going to try to pass something. I think the Democrats have decided that this bill is going to prove that they can govern, and if they don't get something passed, that's worse than nothing. And so they're going to pass something. But, you know, the issue is we're not going to get where we ought to be. As you said, what I found in my book is all the other countries like us, advanced free market democracies, all of them, cover everybody with good quality care, and they all spend half as much as we do. And that's not a coincidence. If you cover everybody, A, you're doing the morally right thing, but B, you save money. Universal coverage is just cheaper. All the other countries prove that. So to me, that's the goal we ought to aim for, universal coverage at reasonable cost. I know we could get there because all the other countries like us have done it, but we seem to be further away now.
Yeah. In the book's prologue, at the outset, you say if we want to fix American health care, we have to answer a basic question. Should we guarantee medical treatment to everyone who needs it? And this question then serves as a theme throughout the book. But I wonder, has the moral issue been largely mute in our debate here in this country?
Yeah, that's what I think. You know, in my book, I talk about how all the other rich countries got to universal coverage. And the pattern is pretty much the same. Generally, what happened is a leader came along and convinced people that a rich society has an obligation to provide health care for everybody, basically convinced people to do the right thing. In many cases, the insurance industry and the drug industry and the hospital companies fought back like crazy. But when these countries focus on doing the right thing, on the moral issue, they can get to universal coverage. And as I say in my book, every time we've tried this, the moral argument kind of gets lost in the shouting about insurance company reimbursement rates and hospital premium levels, and all the mechanics kind of take over in the United States.
Yeah. It was surprising to learn that some of the healthcare systems in the world of the wealthy industrialized nations go back quite a ways. The roots of the German system go back to 1883.
Yeah, that was the world's first universal healthcare system. And gradually other countries started to copy it. Japan copied the German model. But a lot of countries took a while. France has very good coverage, covers everybody, but they didn't actually get to 100% coverage until about 1998. Switzerland did it in 1994. Several of the newly rich countries in East Asia, South Korea, Taiwan, Malaysia, had got to universal coverage in the 90s. Generally, as a country gets wealthy, it decides that universal health care for everybody who needs it is something it wants to provide. The only one that hasn't done that, the only rich country, is the United States.
The U.S., you report, performs below other wealthy countries on health care in terms of cost, quality, and choice. What's the extent of our underperformance?
It's pretty striking. That was one of the most striking things I found. Look, it's certainly true, Celeste, that some people in America get the best care in the world. If you have great insurance or a lot of money, you go to the Mayo Clinic and nobody can beat the kind of care you get there. That's why Arab sheiks fly to America to get treated. The problem with our system is that tens of millions of people will never get in the door of the Mayo Clinic. A lot of people get little or no care at all. Whereas other countries, the other countries like us, have a basic floor of care that everybody has the same access to. You know, some people in France and Germany get fabulous care too, but everybody gets decent care, and that's the difference in America. Here we have some people getting fantastic care, but there's so many millions who don't.
Yeah, would you tell us about Nikki White?
Yeah, well, she's a tragic instance of a terrible fact about America's cruel healthcare system. According to the National Academy of Sciences, about 22,000 Americans die every year of treatable diseases because they couldn't afford a doctor. No other rich country lets that happen. And you know what, Celeste? These are not the poorest people. Really poor people have access to Medicaid. If they live in a city like Chicago, they can go down to the public hospital. No, the people who die in America because they can't see a doctor are working people. They're middle-class people. They got sick, and then they lose their job, and then you lose your insurance. And if you've ever been sick, you can't buy insurance in America. So here's their plight. This is what happened to Nikki White. She had too much money to qualify for Medicaid, but too little money to pay for the doctors and hospitals she needed to treat her disease. She had lupus. Lupus is a serious disease, but most lupus sufferers in America live a normal lifespan. They live to 75 or 80. Nikki couldn't afford a doctor. She couldn't afford drugs. She couldn't get on Medicaid. She pleaded with everybody to give her insurance coverage. Nobody would. And she died at age 32 in the United States of America.
Yeah. What would it have cost to save her life?
It would have cost in the range of $600 or $700 a year for the treatment she needed. And, of course, as is common in America, at the end of her life, when Nikki collapsed and was in a terminal state, then the ambulance came and took her to the emergency room, and they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on her, which would not have needed to be spent if she had had some kind of health care coverage when she was 28 or 29. But no, in America, if you've ever been sick, the insurance companies won't take you on. And she was left out. And as I say in my book, if Nikki had been a resident of any other wealthy country, Japan, Sweden, Canada, Britain, France, Germany, Switzerland, she'd be alive today.
How many Nikki Whites are there?
Well, the National Academy of Sciences did this famous study, which I think everyone accepts as a valid study, 9 years ago, and they said 18,000. They developed a formula for determining this, and then the Urban Institute in Washington updated their formula about 3 years ago and came to 22,000 Americans per year. There's a new study just done by the Harvard School of Public Health that says the number could be as high as 44,000 people a year. It's clear that tens of thousands of our fellow citizens die every year because they can't afford to see a doctor. Let's think about that for a minute, Celeste. On September 11th of 2001, 3,000 Americans died, and we've spent billions, hundreds of billions, to make sure it doesn't happen again. But that year and every other year, 20,000 Americans died because they couldn't see a doctor, and we just can't bring ourselves to provide care for those people.
Yeah. And how many bankruptcies are there due to medical bills that can't be paid?
Yeah, that's another good question. The great study on this, the leading study, was also done by the Harvard School of Public Health, and they said about 700,000 to 800,000 Americans go bankrupt every year because they happen to get sick and couldn't pay their medical bills. And I read that study. I think it's a little of a stretch. It's clear the number is appallingly high, whether it's 800,000, I don't know, but here's what happened. I was giving a speech to a bunch of physicians, and I said, you know, 22,000 Americans die and some large number go bankrupt every year because of our medical system. The Harvard study says 800,000, but I think it's kind of hokey. That's what I said. And this woman in the audience raises her hand and says, well, I'm Dr. Steffi Wohlhandler of the Harvard School of Public Health, and I wrote that study. So from now on, I'm going to take the 800,000 as the number. Anyway, it's an appalling number, and it should be zero. You know how many people go bankrupt in Britain because of medical bills? Zero.
Yeah.
France, zero. Germany, zero. Switzerland, zero. Japan, zero. It doesn't happen in other countries. It doesn't have to happen here. We could fix it.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, journalist T.R. Reid. His latest book is The Healing of America, A Global Quest for Better, Cheaper, and Fairer Healthcare. My name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with questions, comments. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And you can also email us a question or a comment. The address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's take a phone call now. Listener in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon.
Yeah, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, a number of comments and a question or so, but I'll just start with early in the healthcare debate or somewhere in the middle of it. One of the representatives from Texas made the point that in Europe, one out of five people die because of their, quote, socialistic healthcare system, that people just can't get to the doctor, so to speak. And I'm curious, in your opinion, is this misrepresented deliberately by the Republican Party and by the Tea Party people, or is it just there's so much controlled by the special interest? And another number of other comments. There's been a number of articles in the last year or so in two liberal Catholic periodicals, Common Wheel and the Jesuit publication America, and constantly has brought up the fact of the extreme capitalism that's pursued by this country in terms of Milton Friedman's influence and his quote-unquote altar boy Greenspan, and of course the great writer Ayn Rand. And this, to my mind, somewhat ties in with the voting bloc of the perversion of Protestant Christianity in terms of the health wealth gospel. And I'm going to toss out a bunch of thoughts here. There's a book called The Family about the incredible number of elected representatives and businessmen who are members of this right-wing Catholic, or not Catholic, right-wing Protestant group that identifies Christianity with capitalism. And I'll just hang up. And one other comment. This new senator from Massachusetts, if Obama or anyone else among the Democrats had appeared in a spread in some magazine like he has, I could just see the uproar. And I'll toss in one more. There's a Latin third declension noun, vomer, V-O-M-E-R. It's called plowshare. It means plowshare and has other meanings, too. And when I think of Senator Brown, I think of that Latin now. But, okay, I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. T.R. Reid, what do you want to do with that?
I just have no basis at all. I just never heard a number one of five people in Europe die because they don't have access. The point about European countries is they do have access to a doctor. I think there has been some criticism in America of waiting lines in Europe, and it's true in Britain. you know, if you're really sick in Britain or Canada, they treat you. But in both Britain and Canada, there are waiting lines. If you want to see a specialist, you have to wait. In Canada, I think they're really long lines. I'm pretty critical of Canada in my book for this. But if you have an acute illness, they treat you, and they, you know, they treat you very cheap or free. I don't think anybody's dying in those countries because they can't get to a doctor. They're living with a bum hip or a bad knee or a sore back because they can't get to an orthopod because they have to wait. But if you have an acute illness, they treat you. There are very good comparative studies on this, many of them done by the Commonwealth Fund in New York. It's an American organization. They do what they call the International Scorecard, and get this, on standard measures like waiting time for an appointment, waiting time to see a specialist, waiting time for elective surgery, Germany, France, the Netherlands, and Japan all do better. They're faster than the United States. We wait longer than they do, and they cover everybody. So I think during that debate this year, there were a lot of nutty statistics thrown out trying to show that other countries don't do as well as we. But, you know, all the standard numbers show, look, in some areas we're great. We have the highest recovery rate of any country from breast cancer. We have a very high recovery rate from prostate cancer. When the United States focuses its brilliance and its innovative talent on a problem, we can solve it. But for most major diseases, the other rich countries do better than we do, significantly better. I'll tell you the one that really bugs me, it drives me crazy, infant mortality. This is how many new babies die within the first year of life. That's largely a function of health care. Of the 23 richest countries, the United States is the worst. We're the worst at keeping newborn babies alive. So somebody who wants to argue that we have the best health care in the world, I just think it's a very hard argument to make. And look, you know, Bill Gates' kid, if Bill Gates' kid had the most serious disease on earth, brilliant doctors would be, you know, recruited to work on that child and save him. It's all the others. It's the tens of millions. It's Bill Gates' chauffeur's kid is the one who's going to be left to die in the United States.
Let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line two. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
You said that this is the only highly developed nation in the world which doesn't have
universal coverage.
Universal coverage, yes. It's also the only country in the developed world in which the political system is corrupted by unlimited spending, and it just got a whole lot worse yesterday. And I predict that any future reforms are going to be very, very difficult because of what the Supreme Court did in removing all spending limits by corporations. I have agreed with almost everything you've said. The infant mortality rate, by the way, in this country, in our inner cities, is higher than in Cuba. And we're barely ahead of Cuba overall. I think that's an interesting statistic.
It's a good point. Cuba has really admirable health care relative to what a poor country is, but it's not a free country. It's not an industrialized democracy, so I didn't take it as a model in my book. I try to look more at countries like us, you know, countries that respect free markets and private property, individual liberties. As for the corporate money flowing into politics, you know, whatever you think of the Supreme Court decision, a lot of other countries allow corporate contributions. Britain does. France does. Switzerland has huge corporate money swirling around its politics. And here's what happened. In Switzerland, used to have a healthcare system like ours. They had for-profit insurance companies, and just like our companies, if you'd ever been sick, they wouldn't cover you. Why would they want to do that? They might actually lose money if they insured somebody who might make a claim. And the Swiss decided that was wrong. They decided that everybody in their country, it's a rich country, should have access to health insurance. And so they passed a law taking the profit out of health insurance, and their big insurance companies poured tens of millions of dollars into that campaign. The drug companies fought it, the hospital companies fought it, and they passed a national referendum to provide universal care. And the reason is a leader came along, a woman named Ruth Dreyfus, who went around the country of Switzerland and convinced people that they ought to do the right thing. And guess what? After that happened, Ruth Dreyfus became the first woman president of the Swiss Federation because people appreciated her. And the system's now been in effect for 15 years. Everybody's happy with it. Even the insurance companies are pleased that they live in a country where everybody has coverage. The insurance companies' executives I talked to in Switzerland all kind of dumped on the United States because we don't do it.
Hmm. You mentioned that the countries that you looked at respect free markets and private property. But one of the fears that some Americans seem to have is that we're headed for socialized medicine. So what do you think of that concern? How do you answer that?
Well, socialized medicine is a very powerful term in American politics. We all know it's bad, but I'm not sure Americans know what socialized medicine means. I don't know if you know this, but that term was kind of invented by a PR firm hired by the AMA, a Chicago firm, in fact, in 1947 when Harry Truman proposed universal coverage, and the docs didn't like that idea, so they said this is socialized medicine. If you want to provide health care for your neighbor, you're a communist kind of thing. That was pretty powerful during the Cold War. It's still powerful. But here's the striking thing I found. You can see it in my book. A lot of industrialized democracies cover everybody in the private sector, private docs, private hospitals, and private insurance. They're less socialized than the United States. In fact, I argue in my book that many of these countries, Germany, Netherlands, Belgium, Switzerland, they don't have Medicare. People stay with private insurance after they turn 65. They don't have Medicaid. The low-income people are in the private system. It's less socialized in the United States. You can definitely cover everybody at reasonable cost in the private sector, and if you read my book, you'll see how, because a lot of countries do it.
The World Health Organization ranks France as having the world's number one health care system. Why? What's their system like?
It's a good system. A, it covers everybody. There's 61 million people. They're all covered. Health care is very cheap. They do have a copay. Every time you go to the doctor in France, even for a hangnail, you have to pay. A lot of countries go to the doctors free, but the French wanted to make it clear to people that they're getting something of value. And then insurance pays back your fee to the doctor usually within 3 days. Health insurance works very fast in France. In fact, nowadays, because all the billing is done, they don't have any paper in the French system. It's all digital records. Most people are reimbursed for their doctor visit by the insurance company the same day. You get the money back the same day through a bank transfer. You know anybody in Illinois who has insurance that good? No. And it's good care, and their health statistics are excellent. The one striking thing about France, as I say in my book, is it's pretty austere. I mean, you go to a doctor's office in France, and this is pretty run down and plain. There's no big screen TV or National Geographic in the waiting room. They're just plain white walls because they don't pay the doctors and hospitals very much. It's one of the ways they keep their costs down. But everybody can go. Everybody gets treated. The costs are low, as I said. And here's a striking thing. You go to the doctor in France, and on the wall, she is required to list the price that she's going to charge you for every procedure. And then the chart, on the next line of the chart shows how much of that your insurance company is going to pay you back, because this is all set in stone. It's set. No American doctor could post that price because they don't know how much they're going to be paid. You know, American medicine is kind of a lottery. You go into the hospital and get treated, and 2 months later, this enormous bill shows up. You have no idea what you are going to be asked to pay for, and generally you have no idea what your insurance company is going to pay, what part of it is going to pay, if any. But other countries have done it smarter. You know what you're going to pay when you go in.
Yeah. Well, how do French doctors feel about the French system?
They complain all the time. But, you know, I don't think anywhere in the world, and I went to a lot of countries, I never met a doctor who was paid enough. They're like farmers. You know any farmers, Celeste? I mean, every farmer I've met is working his brains out and doesn't make enough money for it, and that's true around the world. Docs, too. I just don't meet many doctors who feel that their pay is adequate.
And journalists,
too.
That's true
in France, it's true in Germany, it's true in Japan, and it's true in the United States.
Journalists as well.
Nobody pays me enough.
Yeah, that's right.
Not even close.
Right. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Journalist T.R. Reid is our guest today. His latest book is The Healing of America, A Global Quest for Better, Cheaper, and Fairer Healthcare. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. I'm really enjoying the show. Thanks, Celeste, for having T.R. Reid on, and Thomas, I've followed you on NPR, so I'm really thrilled to have you on our local station.
Thank you very much.
I have a couple of comments. One, I lived in Germany in the 70s, and I never heard of anyone dying from lack of health care, and I went and started a job, and I went to the doctor almost immediately for my back. And they wrote me off sick for, well, like 2 or 3 weeks, and I was still paid. And I got health care the whole 6 years I lived there and really got a lot of treatment for and got it diagnosed, my scoliosis diagnosed. And you had to wait a long time at the doctor, but I never had to wait a long time for an appointment.
Yeah, that's striking. Germany is good. Germany does much better than the United States in waiting time. And the Germans have more choice, too. If you're in a, get this, Germany today, they actually had more when you were there, but they have 220 different insurance companies. Anybody in Germany can buy any one of those plans. If you don't like your insurance company, get this, you can drop it on 60 days' notice, and the next guy can't raise your rates. So that's better choice of insurance than any American has, and then they don't have this in-network business where you have to go to somebody your insurance company has picked out ahead of time. In Germany, in most countries, you can go to any doctor, any lab, any traditional healer you want, and insurance has to pay. So the other
right,
countries
that was
have
my
more
experience.
Choice.
I also got a one-month, what do they call it, Erholungskur. It doesn't translate well. A cure, but it was 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And then you get 1 week to recover. 4 weeks for my back where I got lava packs and.
You went to a spa.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Germany.
Bad.
Yeah.
Bad Orp. That was it. It was east of Frankfurt.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's
then,
Germany. Yeah.
In this country, my eldest son is 3 years ago. He was 46, and he's on Medicare disability, and he had an abscess tooth, which, but, you know, Medicare doesn't cover dental. So it advanced to where he almost died because it went to his, fortunately, it didn't go to his kidneys or his heart, which are the usual things that kill you. It went to his lungs, and he had severe sepsis.
Wow.
He went in to emergency. So by the time it got to be an emergency, they could give him antibiotics at emergency for his abscess tooth. And then they admitted him to the hospital. He had his gallbladder taken out. The next day, fortunately, the doctor saw he wasn't okay, called another physician. They put him in the ICU. He was there for 2 months. He was on a ventilator for 8 weeks. Then he went to rehab. And the whole thing with doctors and the whole kit and caboodle cost over $700,000. And all that for a thousand or two, all his teeth could have been fixed.
Yeah, exactly.
And, Fortunately, Medicare paid most of it. His wife is also handicapped, but she works, and they were able to get, so they ended up having to pay about $7,000, which was like 1%.
Yeah, yeah.
But that still was a lot for them. And, you know, it just boggles the mind that this country pays. It's like the one you were talking about earlier that
she died because
for lack of, what did you say, 700, the woman that had lupus?
Yeah, exactly. Look, the point you're making here, gets to a crucial point that clearly members of Congress haven't figured out yet, and that is universal coverage saves money.
Absolutely.
If you cover everybody, the system spends less per capita by far, and I know that doesn't sound logical. All you have to do is do what I did. Go to any other country. They all cover everybody, all the rich countries do, and they spend half as much as we do on health care. Those two go together. I won't take the time now to explain, but believe me, that works. So,
yeah, I've experienced it. Both
the other thing is...
even if my son is alive, but, you know, it costs the taxpayer a pretty penny.
It's amazing, yeah, the money we could have saved by... one other point may I make, Celeste. Guess what? Universal coverage reduces the number of abortions. If you want to reduce the number of abortions in America, then provide health care for everybody. For example, in Britain, abortion is legal and it's free. All health care is free in Britain. But they have a lower rate of abortion than we do. And I asked the Cardinal Basil Hume, when I lived in London, I asked him about that. And he said, well, isn't it obvious? Isn't it obvious? He said, if that frightened, unemployed, unmarried 19-year-old who's pregnant, if she knows that she and her baby are going to have access to decent health care, she's much more likely to carry that baby to term. So there's just so many advantages you get out of universal coverage. It's hard for me to see why we don't have it. I don't understand the opposition.
Well, I want to thank the listener for her call, and we've got some other folks waiting for us. Next, we go to Belgium, Illinois, line 4. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm afraid I got to point out something here that everybody seems to be missing.
Yep.
The obvious fact here is that we're not smart enough for the form of government that we have. If we allow these people who we elect to spend $1 trillion in the last 10 years on two wars that were not necessary in any way, and we now the Supreme Court says that corporations have the same right to change our minds in ways that we don't understand, there's no hope for us to move in any intelligent way. We have to change the way the government is done. To do this, we can't allow these interest groups to have so much say in this. It's just absolutely ridiculous. So the problem is more with us than it is with anything else. We've got to vote the people in that says they do it the intelligent way, not the stupid way. Thank you very much.
Okay.
No, I'm with them on that. Let's elect people to Congress who will give us universal coverage. It'll save us money. It's morally right. It will reduce the number of abortions. It increases preventive medicine. It works. And we, as I say, our elected members of Congress keep losing sight of that. But let me point this out. Senator Scott Brown, the Republican who was just elected in Massachusetts, was in Washington yesterday, and he said, I want to see everybody have health coverage. I mean, he's for it. I was at one of these great congressional junkets last weekend. We all went to a Ritz-Carlton in Florida, you know, it was a lovely place, and I briefed these members of Congress and was pointing out the benefits, as I just mentioned to you, of covering everybody. And most of the Republicans who were at this meeting said, yeah, we think we should cover everybody. So they seem to be there. They just, what is it, they don't want to mess with the corporate interests that like our current system. I don't quite know why they're not making the change, but I think there is a sense among many members of Congress that the right way to go is to cover everybody, which raises the question, why haven't we done it? And I really can't answer that. I wish I knew.
Yeah, do you think the answer is it's too politically charged at this point? And I know that one of the things that after the reform effort of the Clinton administration, one of the things said was that American health care is too big to change, and you have a chapter in the book on this. So what are your thoughts there? Politically charged and just too big?
Well, there's a ton of money. You know, it's a $2.4 trillion industry. One out of every $6 we spend in the United States is on health care. So there are hundreds of companies making more than $1 billion a year on health care, and they're, of course, going to fight change. And for them to put up $1 million, that's way under 1/1000th of what they earn to fight for the current system. So that's always going to be an issue, but it's an issue in other countries too, as I said in my book. And there, a leader who makes the moral case to people can get this done. And I feel that the Democrats and the Obama administration lost the argument. They didn't do a very good job of presenting the argument. Why? Well, for one reason, last summer when President Obama was out selling his plan, he didn't know what his plan was. You know, he left it to Congress. He didn't know when people said, are you for a public option? He didn't know, because he didn't know if there was going to be one in the bill or not. And that makes it a little harder to sell your program if you don't know what's in it.
Let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line two. You're on the air with T.R. Reid. Hi.
Yes, hello. You're talking to the converted in this community. I think you will find, as every caller seems to have affirmed, I too lived in Germany, and you can hear from my voice that I'm familiar with yet another national health care.
The NHS, I bet, huh?
Yes.
Yes.
But in Germany, I too went on a Kur. I would point out, though, that I also got 7 weeks vacation a year. So on top of the four-week Kur, I don't know how that economy keeps on being the lion of Europe. One of my, well, I'm extremely concerned that it doesn't seem to be floating here in the States, and I do have citizenship, so I can vote. But one concern is this incredible fraud that one hears about with Medicare. How on earth does that come about, and does it occur with, say, the National Health, where it's a system that is a public option, one might say, and how and why does it occur here, and how could it be prevented if one had a public option for health care?
This incredible what now were you asking about?
The fraud in Medicare, Medicare fraud, billions of dollars.
Oh, yeah, you know what? Every country has that.
Every country has it.
Yeah, in the NHS, doctors
wow.
bill the National Health Service in Britain for
things they don't
procedures
do.
They didn't do. Germany has
oh,
it.
Oh, my gosh.
Even Japan. I wrote a whole book about how honest the Confucians are in Japan and
yes.
in East Asia. And in Japan, there was a doc who was going out on the street and going to homeless people. He gave them $50.
Yeah.
And they signed a certificate saying they had a heart transplant, and he billed the government for it, you know. So every country has this problem, and you police it in different
ways. You've
got
to throw enough people at, yes, exactly, enough inspectors, but they certainly didn't do a good job inspecting the financial situation in this country, so...
yeah, our regulators,
and,
yeah.
you know, $16 yeah. billion again, oh, whoopee.
Yeah, so...
But anyway,
no, every country has that problem. It's a little less of a problem in other countries because their basic payment levels are lower. They just pay the doctor.
Oh, incredibly,
less
incredibly
than, but
low.
Still, they all have that issue.
Even in a paying country, I have just returned from South Africa where my 90-and-a-half-year-old mother had to have gallbladder surgery with no insurance. She's not South African.
Yeah.
They do actually have insurance, believe it or not. Anyway, the bills came in to about, she was in hospital for about 6 days. Absolutely superb treatment, wonderful, wonderful surgeons. The facility getting a bit ropey at the edges, but the total was about $7,000.
Yeah, yeah, so that would be one night in America.
That was everything. That was the surgeon, the anesthetist, the hospital stay.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll get off because I could rabbit on all day, but very interesting topic. I hope it comes about and before November.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Next, we go to a listener waiting for us in Spring Bay on line three. Hi.
Yes, good afternoon. I saw your PBS special. Was it a Frontline?
Yes, right. Sick Around the World. Thank you.
Very informative and well done. The argument that I make, and I never seem to hear politicians talking about it when they're trying to sell this, is every advanced country, as you say, has this universal-type coverage, and I never hear of anyone really complaining. I don't hear of politicians running against it, trying to overthrow it or what have you. It seems to be very popular, and we keep hearing these politicians in America say, oh, you don't want Canadian or you don't want a British, or And yet these people all seem to be very happy. What do they know that we don't? And I'll hang up and listen off the air. Thank you very much.
Well, you've got a good point, and that is when you measure satisfaction with the healthcare system and satisfaction with your personal healthcare, the other rich countries all rate significantly higher than the United States. Canada has much higher levels of satisfaction than we do, and yet there are people in Canada who don't like the Canadian system. They would rather have a free market system like the U.S. does. And I think there are about 20 of them. And you know what, Celeste? I think I've met every one of them on Fox News. Every time I go on Fox to sell my book, there's somebody from Canada who had had terrible treatment and had to go to the Mayo Clinic to get it fixed. And, of course, my answer is, hey, if you've got the money to go to the Mayo Clinic and pay out of pocket, that's fine. We don't have to worry about you. That she's not a problem for a healthcare system. But as a general rule, all these countries have significantly higher satisfaction rates than the United States does. And that's kind of independent of the model. Britain is socialized medicine. The government provides the health care there, people like that. Germany, as I said, is private docs and private insurance, and people are happier there than they are here. And the Canadian system is kind of a blend. You go to private doctors, but it's paid for by a public insurance plan, and they have significantly higher satisfaction rates than we do. So I think the caller's right. When people around the world try these systems of universal coverage, they like them. And may I make just one more point? When Americans get government-run health care, they love it. The VA and the Medicare are much more popular and have much higher satisfaction rates than any private insurance plan. So in the abstract, we hate government-run insurance, but in the concrete, when we get it, we really like it.
Let's take another call. A listener in Chicago on line one. Hi.
In terms of personal success in alternative or complementary medicine, I found that actually this one woman was talking about an abscess tooth, which I had, was treated very successfully with some homeopathic preparations almost immediately, and also even magnetic therapy applied to some other conditions too. But I wanted to ask her, you felt that alternative complementary medicine was being covered by insurance in the other countries that you had encountered?
Yeah, well, that varies by country. Germany covers the works. They cover homeopathy. They cover magnetic treatment. Germany covers everything. The Japanese system covers just about everything, including traditional Chinese herbal medication, acupuncture, and all Western techniques. But the Brits are pretty stingy. There's a lot of stuff the British system won't pay for. The French are kind of choosy about what they'll pay for. So it varies by country. So when you had homeopathy, did your American insurance company pay the bill?
And the caller is not with us anymore.
I think some of them do. I think most insurance plans in America now pay for acupuncture. So if people kind of demand this coverage, you can coerce your insurance company into paying for it. But I don't think we do. Relative to other rich countries, we probably cover our insurance companies probably cover as much alternative medicine as most of the other ones do.
Let's take one more call at least. Indianapolis, line four. Hi.
Good discussion. I hate to be pessimistic, but it's kind of looking to me like no matter how much information, good information there is about what other countries are succeeding with and what we might be failing with, it's probably not going to matter. There are too many people who just want to hate this, and it's just going to be that way. But it looks to me like even if that were the case, that, you know, if there weren't like just a handful of politicians in the Senate who had stood up against it for their own careers, that maybe something good could have passed. The bill as it exists now, I hate it. Although I want universal care, I think that's a disaster. And I just wonder if you're watching the politics of this to see any alignment of stars where those people could be changed or if there's an effort to replace them or anything along that lines.
Your experience is pretty similar. I think the polls show pretty clearly that most Americans have turned against the health care plan in Congress. It's so complicated. It looks like it's going to be expensive. The process of getting to it, the wheeling and dealing in the back rooms, that really turned people off. So I kind of think whatever was pending up there is gone. I just read today in the Washington Post, a great newspaper, that they may try to bring back the system where they were going to let anybody over 50 buy into Medicare as an option. That would be a good solution. Medicare works fine, and people like it. And if you could do that, I think that might be the way to go for our country. If they could pass that bill, that would be a valuable advance for America.
Okay. There we'll wrap up. T.R. Reid, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Well, it's great to be back. Thank you for having me.
T.R. Reid is the author most recently of The Healing of America, A Global Quest for Better, Cheaper, and Fairer Healthcare. The book is published by the Penguin Press.